This is UN News. I'm Conor Lennon. Around a quarter of the world's population will have taken part in some form of election by the end of this year. That's around 2 billion voters. But that doesn't necessarily mean that their participation will affect the way their country is governed. Some governments and governance systems are becoming increasingly repressive, to the concern of the UN, which promotes inclusive, effective and accountable governance. Someone who knows all about that is Sarah Lister, the head of governance at the UN Development Programme, who's here in our New York studios. Hello, Sarah. Thanks for being with us.
Hello. Nice to be here.
And we have Ian Walker, the CEO of New Democracy. He's joining us from Chile, Australia. Hello, Ian.
Good afternoon, Conor and Sarah.
Good afternoon, good morning. Yes, of course. Very early morning for you, Ian. Yes, New Democracy. You've organised several citizens' assemblies, some with the support of the UN Democracy Fund, which have had a big impact on national policies in these countries. And we'll come to that in just a second. But first of all, Sarah, I'd like to start with you. Let's talk about democracy in the UN. Now, the United Nations is made up of sovereign member states. We don't get involved in how they run their affairs. We don't generally interfere with them. But to what extent do we get involved in democracy?
Well, democracy is a core value of the UN, and we've long advocated for governance systems that promote values and principles of greater participation, equality, security, and human development. That doesn't mean that we impose any particular system on member states or say that any particular system is right. Member states are sovereign and have the rights, and we support them to have the capacities to run their governance processes in the way that best suit them. But obviously we do also, at the as the UN, provide support for democratic institutions and processes in various ways, including providing electoral assistance when requested to do so.
Right, so part of that is, well, as you say, it's an electoral system, so helping set up elections, the actual process side of things.
We provide support on specific request of member states or by mandate of the General Assembly or the Security Council on a wide range of issues around support to inclusive, peaceful and credible elections. That can be anything from procuring ballot boxes, which is much less common these days, to advising national authorities around issues of misinformation, to supporting civil society organisations around civic literacy. So a wide range of activities, including supporting in some places women's organisations or other national stakeholders in the ways that is best and is requested by national authorities.
And can you give me an idea of some recent countries that you've been involved in?
Yep. So this year, for example, Pakistan was a very large election that we supported in a number of ways. In South Africa, we supported on voter education, electoral conflict management, combating disinformation and misinformation, and we have Mozambique coming up shortly as well. That's one of but in the last 2.5 years, we've actually supported some 47 elections in 38 countries. So the range of countries and regions where we work is very wide.
And as I said in the introduction, the UN is very much in favour of representative democracy and democratic governance. And one example of that is citizens' assemblies. As I said, Ian, the United Nations Democracy Fund has supported some of the projects you're involved in. Can you just give me an example of some of those projects?
Certainly. We were originally approached looking at the UN Democracy Fund taking interest in citizens' assemblies. So starting point was to produce a handbook and a guide in, I think, 9 languages, run 3 demonstration projects. And those demonstration projects were in Malawi, North Macedonia, and Brazil. So all countries that are a little more early in some of their journey on the way to democracy, and all places with no real heritage of this idea. So they were the starting points. And what's great, because deliberative democracy, it's just built on a set of principles. It's really easy to apply that in very different national and cultural contexts.
Well, let's take a step back and explain what a citizens' assembly is for.
Certainly. Citizens' assembly is a great complementary measure alongside elected representatives as a way of getting past those barriers we all see in our democracy. So we'd suggest that one of the hardest constraints on anyone in elected office is uninformed public opinion. It's really tough to show leadership when your job hangs on a popularity contest of 100,000 people who may not have been paying a lot of attention. So the analogy is with the criminal justice system and the jury. Connor, if you and I have a wild night out and get arrested, we won't ask for a phone poll of 1,000 people. We'll take a random selection of people, expose them to diverse and contested information, and give them time to reach common ground. So the thesis is that if you bolt this on alongside a parliament, and the parliament agrees that they want citizens to give them some direction on a question, you ask them an open question, you have a representative group of people, and if they find common ground, that's a great example of real people in day jobs from all walks of life saying, actually, this is a range of things that are okay with us now we've had a chance to think. One of the biggest challenges in our democracy is opinion polling asks people what they think when they haven't had time to think. All really, really do is stretch that out and then give people a chance when they come from different perspectives, rich and poor, old and young, different ethnic backgrounds, to come together and not say these are all our different individual views, but this is what we can agree to. And that should then empower those in elected office.
Now, I know that citizens' assemblies, they're not the only form of representative democracy out there, the ways of coming together to these decisions, as Ian was saying. But one thing that I find really interesting about them is that I just wonder if you agree with this, Sarah, that they can be an antidote to the polarization that we see as a result of these very black and white, particularly social media messaging and misinformation that goes out there, because it brings people with different ideas together and forces them to interact with each other.
Yes, I mean, I think we are in need of democratic renewal in many ways, in many societies. And it's really important that people are given more opportunities for their voices to be heard, for their opinions to be taken into account. And I think recent surveys have said that 2 out of 3 people say that their voices, they don't think that their voices are heard in political systems. And I think that's one part of the reason that we see in many places this so-called backlash against democracy, that we have formal systems in place and yet people feel that their voices are not being heard. So citizens' assemblies, citizen juries are one way, I think, as Ian says, which is complementary to formal processes of representative democracy. And there are other ways as well. And all of them are predicated on a kind of a range of democratic institutions that need to be in place in society for them to function well. There needs to be open civic space. There needs to be civic literacy amongst people. So part of what we're doing at UNDP is broadening the conversation beyond that of just elections and saying, what do societies need to have in place and what are the institutions and processes for democratic principles to be at play?
Well, I saw you nodding there, Ian, and as someone who's been on the ground in these examples of what you said are fairly early stage democracies, what was the follow through? I.e., you've had this great experience, people feel empowered around a particular issue. Was there then follow through to a higher level in terms of governance?
Connor, you've asked the wonderful question I was hoping you wouldn't. We didn't even have to stage it. In each of those instances, courtesy of a UN Democracy Fund grant, we were able to empower a local team. Now, in each case in Brazil, in North Macedonia, in Malawi, each of these people taking this method for the very first time has now gone on to do future and other projects in this field. So effectively, it was a seeding and a catalyst, because in democracy and for politics, you need a story. You need a practical real-world example of something working. And if I look at Delibera in Brazil or the Zip Institute in Malawi or Edwin working in Malawi there, in each case, all of a sudden they got a first project that told a story of here's a hard problem and it got fixed. That was regional and municipal waste in northern Brazil, COVID policy in North Macedonia, and use of community development funds in Malawi. And you started to show to leaders, particularly in political office, this is a helpful, useful mechanism. Where many people in politics tend to look at what is community engagement as self-selected groups of people yelling at them. And the minute you go to random selected groups of people thinking, the result is transformationally different. So what we've seen is the impact. All those organizations years later are still going out and doing projects in this field in new and different countries. I hope we get the chance to go into 10 more.
Well, it's all very encouraging, and I'm sure as well, you're doing great work in many other countries, Sarah, but this is all fine when everyone is working towards the same objective and everyone has I guess, an honest interest in this. But there are bad actors out there as well. And what do you do in that situation when you are in a situation where, for example, the people in power are anti-democratic? They don't have interests in hearing everyone's views. What are the limitations on what you can achieve? And I'll start with you, Sarah.
Well, that's obviously an excellent question. And there's not one simple answer. I mean, I would premise it by saying that it's important that we are working before we get to that situation also, so that governments and other authorities are able to deliver for people, and that public sectors are delivering and governance is functioning well. So prevention is important in this. But there are contexts which are very complicated, and we all know of them. But in our experience, there are always pockets of democracy and pockets of people, champions for democratic values in different spaces and places. And sometimes that means working more at local governance level. Sometimes it means working within sectoral initiatives. Sometimes it means going a level up and actually looking at regional opportunities to support democratic principles. So it is around looking for different entry points and different processes that can be used to keep space open for democratic action of different types. That is how we would approach it.
But democracy is hard work, isn't it, Ian? You know, you have to invite people to come to these workshops. They have to spend time with you. Democracy can be messy. It doesn't always immediately to a clear answer. And the thing that authoritarians, populists can sell is a clear, seemingly a simple message, a cut through to all of these discussions and all the rest of it. And if people aren't as engaged as the people in your workshops, that can be quite a seductive thing. Someone once said, didn't they, democracy is the worst form of government, mm-hmm. apart from all the other ones.
Yeah.
So why should we stick with democracy? I'll start with you, Ian.
Why should we stick with it? Because people want to have a say in the decisions that affect their lives. And that's the unifying piece. You know, Malawi is one of the poorer countries on earth. I live in Australia, in one of the wealthier countries on earth, and what I see in people's response is the same thing. I want to have a say. People are capable if we give them the opportunity, and citizens' assemblies, kind of like the criminal jury, are a format where your decision matters. Now, of course, there can be barriers to participation, and Connie, you mentioned bad actors. Anything can be cheated. I mean, you can cheat an election in many different ways. You can cheat a citizens' assembly. And the defense is to have a very simple set of principles where if it is breached, that those looking at it can tell. Rules around the random selection. If this is done out of house, not within a government, it's very hard to manipulate a lottery selection. Connor, if I could manipulate a lottery, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you. I would have bought an island. On the information side, of course, you can curate only one side of an argument and push it down people's throat. But a design that always allows the citizens to pick their own sources is a great shock absorber for that. So I won't do chapter and verse, but why I'm optimistic on democracy is you see it everywhere. People want to have a say, and so when they get invited, they turn up.
Optimistic, Sarah?
Mixed. I mean, I think Ian is absolutely right. Surveys consistently show that nine out of 10 people, it's important that they live in a democracy. But equally, we see people voting now in quite large numbers in some places for people and systems that are actually restricting them. And people are talking about a democracy paradox in that sense, that people want to live in a democracy, and yet often they're voting for people who are restricting democratic practice. And I think that comes back to the point I made earlier about needing to be supporting democracy that delivers. It's not good enough just to have a formal democratic system. Authorities and governments need to be delivering in accountable, inclusive and effective ways for their people. And I think that that's a really important route towards democratic resilience as well. Alongside the information space. Ian mentioned it. We haven't talked about that so much, but that's absolutely critical at this time.
Well, I know elections aren't the be-all and end-all, but we're in the middle of the year. There are still plenty to go. I think we've got around, 64 odd this year. Is that around the right number? But there are many.
There are many.
That as we get towards the end of the year, we can have a look again at what's been achieved and what hasn't. And hopefully we can speak again. Sarah Lister from UNDP and Ian Walker from UDemocracy, thank you both very much.